Good morning.
Guten Morgen.
Wie geht's?
Gut, und dir?
Gut, danke. Unless I'm gonna order a beer or a sausage, we've now exhausted my German.
I can speak just a little bit more than that.
Twice in 1 week.
Yeah. With like one day in between, I think, right?
I know. Yeah. Yeah. You're spoiling me. You'll be pleased to know that I enjoyed this episode significantly more than the last one.
Was it less West Wing and schnacks?
There were still schnacks. I will admit that I went through a whole bag of sweet and salty popcorn.
That's okay.
But it wasn't boredom eating. I blame you because you said to me, the last thing you said to me on the podcast recording last time was, no, you're still going to need snacks. Still have snacks.
Okay.
So it's all your fault that I smashed a bag of whole...
I didn't tell you to eat a whole bag of popcorn.
Well, you know, I felt like that was the spirit of what you were saying.
Oh, so you wanted to live up to what I was talking about.
I didn't want to disappoint you is what it is. If you checked on the snack situation and...
you wanted to be accountable to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got it.
Yeah. You said just before we hit record that you could hear my cat purring. Can you still hear her purring? Is this going to... Oh, this is going to be...
Yes, I can still
hear it. Fun then, isn't it? When I do the edit to try and... manipulate the sound to get rid of her purr. Do you know what
your
frequency you purr
cat.
On? Yeah, my enormous cat. What frequency do you purr on? Because I'm going to need to cut that out. She's just looking at me. I mean, reasonably, like I'm an absolute idiot.
She's like, do something.
Yeah. Yeah, she wants something to move quickly on the screen so that she can attack it.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to do like a little song and dance number, that would be great for her.
Oh, yeah, I'll hop right on that.
Thanks. did Abraham get to school? Did the storm...
He didn't have school today.
Oh, my God. He goes to school 3.5 hours sometimes and gets an ice cream.
Yeah, but he didn't get ice cream yesterday.
You win some, you lose some, I guess.
Unlike we... We're not going to risk our lives in the flood just to get you ice cream.
Is it bad? Because I've got a friend in San Francisco who marked herself safe on social media. So I was assuming, and I think it said that 3 people had died or something. So, I mean, I guess that the storms are pretty darn bad.
It's created some mudslides. But, I mean, out in the high desert, our biggest issue is the flooding.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I've been driving back and forth to work and it's just slow and steady, so.
So there's no sort of threat to life where you are immediately?
No, thankfully. Oh,
that's good to know. That's good to know.
Now I just see little ears.
Oh, you can see the tips of her ears.
That's all I see.
She's got her head on the... Head on the side. Here she comes. Don't cut me off. Oh, God. What's happening? Come on. Come on, Murder.
I don't know. I just see Big Gray.
Hi. There we go. She's in on the action. Anything new in the last 2 days that you need to tell me about?
Not really, no. Everything's pretty much the same. How about with you?
No, not masses of news. I did want to give a small update. You texted me the other day and said that people were asking you about Directed by Stefania merchandise and if we were going to do any. And I told you it was in hand. It is. And our friend Diane, friend of the show who does our reels for us, she's actually come up with a design. I had a design in my head that wasn't down on paper yet, purely because my life is very fantastic at the moment. and I wasn't entirely sure when I was actually going to get it into fruition with everything else that I'm trying to get done, with only one hand, or one functioning hand anyway. And Diane wrote to me. It was last week. She wrote to me and said, I've got some ideas for some Stefania merchandise, if it's something that you would be able to put into your marina store and would want to put into the marina store. And she'd already mocked up some designs. I mean, unsurprisingly, they were fantastic. They were great because it's Diane. And I wrote back to her and I said, thank you so much. I'd be very proud to put those in. And it saves me a job. And I said to her, you know, I had had this idea to do this, but like I just said to you, didn't know when I was going to get it done. So now I don't have to worry about it anymore. Thank you. And she wrote back and said, scrap what I've just sent you. I like your idea better. Let me work out something using your idea. And she got it back to me that day, like literally that same day. She got it back to me and she said, what about this? And it's great. So I won't say any more. But she basically reached into my brain and pulled out what I was thinking and got it done for us.
Do we know when they'll be ready?
She's doing some final tweaks. And because I said to her, like, as far as I'm concerned, I'm happy with it. So just whenever you're happy with it, we can sort it.
Okay.
So she's going to do some final tweaks. There's some things that she wants to brush up. But Stefania's episode is episode 4. And we don't go to air for like a month and a bit. So we're going to have plenty of time to get these up. Don't worry. It's coming. So that's my only update, is that for those people wanting some Directed by Stefania merch, some will be coming. And so I'm really grateful to Diane, because when she wrote, she said, I'd really love to kill two birds with one stone. She said, I was going to get a shirt made for myself anyway. She said, but I really love the idea of contributing to the Acto Sicilia fund. She said, so this way, two birds, one stone, I can get a shirt, other people can get a shirt, and we can get some money to Stefania's sister's charity. So
yeah, I mean, that's why I've had a lot of people ask me, is because they specifically want to be able to donate to Acto and get a shirt at the same time. So it's,
well, there we go. It's in hand. It's on its way.
Okay.
Oh, so shall we jump right into 605?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay, I can hear her purring now over my noise-cancelling headphones. Sorry, guys. This cat is the size of a small wild cat, and I don't really want to fight her off. So I hope that you find the purring as soothing as me, because there's no way we're getting rid of her. If anyone's tried to say no to a cat, they know that she's here as long as she wants to be. Yeah.
Okay. It's like double the volume now. She got louder.
She's got her mouth ever so slightly open, so the acoustics have just changed.
Yep.
Lovely. Well, you know, it's apparently supposed to lower blood pressure having a cat purr. It's supposed to kind of calm your heart rate and lower your blood pressure. So this is actually healthy, guys. Think of it as a health initiative, listening to the podcast with Willow in the background. Right. 605, pick up the pieces?
Yep.
Okay. The original air date was the 3rd of November 2022. It was written by Mello Brown. And this interests me because this is, well, I say this is his only writing credit for anything on IMDb. But I just literally saw, it was either yesterday or this morning, that he's posted on Twitter in his Station 19 gear that he's just finished writing and producing another episode of Station 19. So now he will have two credits on IMDb for writing, and both of them will be for Station 19. But literally, when I went on IMDb, he had one credit total, and it was for this episode of Station 19. So I had to Google him to find out who he was. And I went to his own website to find out more, and he's actually a software engineer.
Oh, okay.
But he's also authored some graphic novels, and he's now a staff writer on a couple of TV shows, one called Calls, which is on Apple TV, and American Gods, which is a Prime original. So it seems as though his genre is actually like sci-fi slash fantasy slash horror-ish. So Station 19 seems like a strange fit for him, especially when it appears to be his only 42 minutes of television that he's actually solely responsible for. But I'm not going to complain because I thought this was a really great episode and honestly 10 times better than last week's. So.
I can kind of see the sci-fi tweak to this video. You know, like burning in a battery plant. I can kind of see the sci-fi in that.
Maybe. But I didn't actually think that was the strongest part of the episode. I actually thought that the interpersonal dialogue was really very impressive. I liked this episode. Directed by our very own Jason George, and luckily he had a much better script to work with, in my opinion, for this episode than he was given for his directorial debut in season five. So talking of the battery plant, do you want to start with the incidents? So Andy and Sullivan are on a Crisis One call. They've been called to a rooftop where a guy called Raffi is drinking a bottle of vodka up there, sort of saying quite catastrophically that nobody can help him. All that's left for him is to die a slow and painful death due to some toxins he's been exposed to at work. So he's decided that the plan is to die on his own terms. Andy distracts him by letting him reminisce about being on that selfsame rooftop as a child with his father. And while she's doing that, Sullivan is harnessing up and rigging up some safety equipment. Meanwhile, the rest of 19 have been called to an incident at a battery recycling plant where some workers are trapped in the smelting room and can't be released because it's electronically sealed. And the doors can only be opened with the palm print of an employee who hasn't turned up to work that day. Maya can't smash through the window because it's made of polycarbonate glass. And the people trapped are now saying that there's acid in the air and they've got like 20 minutes to get these folks out before they're toast. So Beckett then sends Theo and Vic up to the roof to vent it. But it's all kind of reinforced steel and stuff. Long story short, they ain't getting in through the ceiling. Back on the rooftop with this guy, Raphael, Andy's further distracting him by sharing with him the story of her mother faking her own death. But he's completely unmoved by that. And she clearly doesn't distract him enough because he sees Sullivan approaching, wearing his gear and completely flips out. The chief has been checking in on both the Crisis One call and the battery factory call because she's running some sort of pilot program where she's checking in on the sort of response times and things. So when she radios into the battery plant for an update from Beckett, she hears him screaming down the phone at the plant manager that they're going to be criminally liable for the deaths of the workers if they don't come down to the plant now. And then she hears the plant manager saying back that it's basically not his fault that Raffi, whose handprint can unlock the doors, didn't turn up that day. So the chief recognizes the name Raffi from the Crisis One call and presumably puts it together that Raphael on the roof is ill because of toxins that he's been exposed to, and there are dangerous toxins going on at this battery factory, and they're looking for a guy called Raffi. Raphael, Raffi, toxins. Oh, look, and a light bulb moment is had, and she realizes that the two are connected. So she radios into Andy that she thinks that her guy on the roof is literally the key to saving all the other people's lives on the call. Whilst, sorry, on the other call, whilst Sullivan tries to talk Raphael down. And then when Andy tells Raphael that his co-workers are in trouble, he spins round to look at her, loses his balance, and falls backwards off the roof. But luckily, because Sullivan's all harnessed up, he leaps off the roof and grabs hold of Raffi and then kind of holds on to him for grim death, because his arms are basically all that's between Raffi and a sticky end. So then Andy goes down a story of the car park. Sorry, I should have said they're on the roof of a car park. So she goes down a story and then instructs the civilian Crisis One helper on how to lower Sullivan down by the rope until she can grab Sullivan and Raffi and pull them in safety into the car park. And then we see Raffi racing to the recycling centre and releasing his colleagues with the palm of his hand. And then in between all of that, there's sort of lots of discussion about, you know, billionaires be billionaireing and the factory owners being irresponsible and all the stuff we expect to hear from Station One that I didn't include because it didn't pertain to the main part of the story.
Okay, that's fair.
Did I kind of hit the main points of the incident / incidents though?
Yes.
Anything that you wanted to add in there that you thought I should have picked up on?
No, I mean, the rest was just a lot of them screaming in the battery acid room, yelling through the window.
Yeah,
not much substance though to add.
In their little tinfoil suits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have loads to say about this. I was slightly distracted by the battery plant clearly being in some sort of brewery or distillery.
Yeah.
That's definitely a place where alcohol is produced in real life. But I just thought it was really well done. I liked the roof scene. I thought that Jason George directed it really well. I think it must have been quite tricky to shoot with, you know, Raffi and Sullivan going over the roof like that. But I thought it was a really good action sequence. So round of applause for you, Mr. Jason George, I'd say.
Yeah, no, this was definitely, he definitely did a good job. Props to Jason George.
Yeah. Anything you wanted to add?
One of my favorite lines of this episode was Andy saying, "I wish I were," when he's like, "Did you make that up about your mom taking your own death?"
Yeah.
It was just a time to chuckle in a very serious, like, very serious scene.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I hate to say it wasn't like a large, you know, incident with much to talk about or much to, you know.
I think sometimes, like, the corn maze incident was very much used to kind of drive the main thrust of the story along with, you know, Meyer's decline. And I think sometimes they do that. And sometimes it's just literally, well, we've got to have them rescue some folks. Because that's what they do for a living. And I feel like that was one of those. That was just we have to have them rescue some folks because that's what they do for a living, rather than a kind of integral part of the show or the storyline. I did like that it wasn't a fire.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it was actually them rescuing people without any fire.
It does make a change.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, so if we're done with that, we can move on to Samson and Delilah.
Okay.
And by Samson and Delilah, of course, we mean the Chief and Sullivan, but they have saved each other's contacts in their phone as Samson and Delilah, which I find quite amusing because Samson lost all his powers when he got his hair cut off, didn't he? And Sullivan is bald as a badger.
Yep.
So it amused me somewhat. But anyway, they do some flirty texting, planning the next hotel visit. But then the Chief puts a stop to it and says she's headed for the gym. And then when she does that, Sullivan kind of stops texting back. And on the way to the call, Andy calls Sullivan on it, saying that he was looking at his phone like a heartbroken teenager. And he sort of confides in her that he's seeing somebody. And Andy tells him that if he wants more from his mystery woman than he's getting, he has to tell her and he has to ask for what he wants. And then at the end of the day, Sullivan then appears to take that on board. He texts the chief back, and then they have a very short but professional conversation on the stairs. But then we see the chief trying to figure out what to say to Sullivan via text after that. And she's kind of typing things into her phone and then deleting them. She says that she wishes they could just go on a date, and deletes that. She says that she was scared for him that day, decides not to send that. Then she says maybe they shouldn't be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then deletes that. And she finally lands on that she hopes that he has a good night, whilst he gives in to his sugar craving and devours a donut. What do you think has given the chief pause for thought?
I think she wants more too, but she knows that they can't. And she's had this discussion with him. And the issue is Andy is giving advice to him based on it being a real, like a relationship you can have.
Civilian.
Yeah. And this is not, I think if Andy knew, she wouldn't be giving that advice. And so it pushed him to basically push the chief again, which is kind of annoying because they've already had the discussion a million times.
Yeah. I kind of thought the same thing, actually. Yeah.
What does he want her to do? I mean,
yep.
What does he want the chief to do? To me, he knew what he signed up for when he started dating her again.
Yeah, same. I feel that she feels that she's under too much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a fish or cut bait kind of a situation. It's obvious that he says we're in the hotel room, didn't he? I don't want to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she feels that that's his stance that he's going to stick to. And so she needs to be the mm-hmm. one to try and create a bit of distance. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Anything more on Samson and Delilah?
No.
Okay. Shall we talk about Travis's campaign next?
Oh, sure.
We start with Vic trying to record a promotional video for her girls' camp idea, but it's going horribly wrong. Theo rescues from herself and reminds Vic that she has a meeting with Travis about his campaign later, and she tells Theo that having to remind her is not a good sign. So, whilst tucking into Maya's big breakfast, the team all get an alert on their phones about an article on Travis and his arrest for public intoxication when he was defending Vic's honour after Ripley's funeral. And then Vic comes running into the beanery screaming that she can fix it, but clearly she has no idea how. And Travis says that he can't believe that they didn't see this coming. The chief, as we said, is spending the day at 19. So Travis goes to apologise to her about the smear campaign and the possible of negative implications it could have for the fire service. But the chief just says that it's the nature of politics, and she gets all manner of mud slung at her. And she says that with their backgrounds, they can expect that they'll have to do even more to ensure that they succeed. So she says to Travis not to let the mud stick, to hurl some back, or to find someone that will do that for him. Meanwhile, Vic is confiding in Theo that she doesn't think that she's doing a good job with Travis's campaign, and Theo tells her that he's never seen her be bad at something that she really wants, so he asks her if she really wants to keep going with the campaign. Then after the call, Vic finds Travis and apologises, saying that she should have anticipated the move by Dixon. Travis tells her that she couldn't have anticipated it, and then, as if by magic, Eli pops out from behind somewhere and says that Travis's records should have been sealed before this happened, and now it needs to have a good deal of spin applied to it to show that Travis did it to stick up for a fellow firefighter and to fight for women in the field. So Vic says that Eli is good, and then excuses herself from the post of campaign manager, saying that she doesn't have the time because she's going to do the girls' camp thing, and tells Travis that it's Eli that he needs. So then, wasting no time, Eli and Travis get to work strategizing in the beanery. when Andy walks in, and then their strategy session turns into a flirting session instead.
Gag me with a spoon.
Gag you with a spoon.
That's a saying we say here when something's like corny or lame or makes you like want to vomit. You say gag me with a spoon.
Gag me with a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't really have a great deal to say about the whole campaign thing. It was very amusing having Vic as Travis's campaign manager, but let's face it, it was never going to work. Mm-hmm. And as much as you and Andy both despise Eli, I think we can all agree that he is far more suited to the job than Vic.
Oh, definitely. It's just the flirting between them two is just...
too much. It's too much.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. Yes. Could well do without it. I'm still looking for the chemistry between Eli and Travis. I can't detect mm-hmm. any yet, but I remember with the first watch through, everyone was saying, oh no, Eli's got way more chemistry with Travis than Andy. But I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I agree. And to be fair, I don't think we saw that much between Andy and Eli. Anyway, I can't remember his name. Andy and Eli to call it, you know, to call that yet at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got chemistry, even though it's that kind of love-hate tension, that kind of mm-hmm. when you love to hate somebody, like it's that mm-hmm. kind of like chemistry that she finds him really, really annoying, but also right. there's something charming and attractive about him. But with Travis and Eli, I can't see it at the minute at all. But I can't remember at what point people were starting to say, oh no, Travis and Eli are the ones with the chemistry.
Yeah, because people called it before it happened. They were like, they're yeah. hand up together. Yeah.
Yeah. And I couldn't see it. But maybe it hasn't started yet. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe it will come. Should we move on? It was all very amusing, but there was nothing mm-hmm. to stick my teeth in, I don't think. I will say that I did like the chief's acknowledgement that they're both minorities and that mm-hmm. as such they have to work harder, and I like that she stuck up for him and said, no, just chuck some mud back, mate, it's fine.
Yeah, no, I liked that scene too. It wasn't long, but it was cool to see that, like, that the chief was having his back already.
Yeah, that he'd gone in there to apologize, and she was like, mm-hmm. it's politics, you know, yeah. what are you going to do? Yes, that was good. Marina, should we talk about Marina?
Of course.
Maya has shut herself in the spare bedroom with her ankle strapped with an ice pack, hiding her injury away from her wife. Karina knocks on the door and Maya dismissively asks her if she needs something. Karina starts recalling the first night they were together, winning a previously cold Maya round, but only very briefly. Because Maya then asks if there's a point to all of this. And Karina says, there she is. There's the jerk who tried to push me away after the first night, and reminds Maya that it was her who wasn't prepared to let Karina go that night. And that at this stage in their relationship, Maya should be past trying to push Karina away.
Mm-hmm.
So Maya opens the bedroom door to see that Karina has recreated their first night together, and Karina tells Maya that she doesn't want to lose them and their love. So Maya takes her by the hand, then holds her face, looks her in the eye, and tells her that she's missed her. Karina says she's missed Maya too. They kiss and they head back to the bedroom, completely ignoring the enormous table of beautifully, freshly prepared Italian food that is in front of them.
I thought that too. I'm like, what about the food?
I know.
Like, it looked really good, and there was a ton of it.
It looks so good. So back at the station, Maya has clearly worked up an appetite somewhere along the line, because she's cooked an absolutely enormous breakfast for everybody and tells Ben in a nudge-nudge, wink-wink way that she very much enjoyed her time off. Then Beckett comes in and thanks her for the breakfast and for being such an asset to the team. And Ben hilariously says that's the first time he could describe Beckett as being casual without adding the word misogyny to the end. And then at the end of the day, Maya finds Karina in an upstairs office and says she's really glad that Karina hasn't left yet and that the call was nearly really awful but ended up not being just like them. And she asks Karina if she's taken a pregnancy test, which Karina says she wouldn't do without Maya. So Maya asks Karina what's wrong then. And Karina says that she wants them to be happy and in love and making a baby, but that she needs Maya to be actively seeking help, saying that that's a boundary that she's going to hold on to and she's asking Maya to honour. Then Maya accuses Karina of trying to control her, saying that she's working through her own pain and her own anger in her own way. And if that angers Karina, then that's Karina's problem, and then walks away, leaving Karina in tears.
Yeah, I didn't like that exchange.
No. And we close out their block with Maya pounding the treadmill, as per usual, cancelling Karina's call on her phone, and then we see Karina doing what she said she wouldn't do, which is grabbing a pregnancy test from her bedside table and storming into the bathroom with it. Mm-hmm. Did I miss anything important?
No. I'm just glad I'm not the only one that noticed the big table of freshly made food.
Look, you know me. If there's a table of food somewhere, I'm noticing it.
Yeah. And as they're walking away, I'm like, but.
Scantily clad woman, ready to go, or a table of food. I'm thinking about it. Like, that's a decision. That's a decision. Maybe take some snacks with you is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, seriously.
First of all, how long has Maya had that ice pack on her ankle that she hasn't seen all of Karina's food prep?
Yeah, right. Like, how long has she been sitting in there? That had to have taken hours.
Yeah. So she's been to the kitchen to get the ice pack out of the freezer, and you're only supposed to do like 10 minutes on, 10 minutes off. So, and I don't think even Karina DeLuca could whip up that spread in 10 minutes. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but she's not going to follow the 10 minutes on, 10 minutes off. What could she do with the ibuprofen?
I know, right? But I think the ice pack would be just like some lukewarm water at this point, like the length of time it must have taken Karina to make that spread.
Yeah,
I'm obsessing over the food a little bit too much. I really want that food. I'm hungry. Whoever did the lighting for that shot when Maya opens the bedroom door just deserves all of the awards. That was so beautifully done. Dare I say iconic? I think that's iconic. I think that little scene might be kind of iconic.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows this appraisal. We're in the Marina family. So,
yeah,
for sure.
The conversation in the office, I find myself ever so slightly torn because, in so many ways, Maya was being completely unfair, bringing up Karina's history with her dad and saying that Karina was trying to control her. But I also kind of identified with Maya saying that she's trying to deal with her trauma in her way. And Karina says to Maya that she's got a boundary she's asking Maya to respect, asking Maya to get professional psychiatric help. But just playing devil's advocate, is there an argument to be made for Karina respecting Maya's boundary of letting her deal with her trauma in her way? And does this kind of then feed into what Sullivan was trying to say last week in relation to Jack, that Maya should have the dignity of her own experience and that she might need to hit rock bottom before she can accept help?
I think Karina's trying to prevent her from hitting rock bottom because she sees that it's not working. And just like Maya, I mean, last time she hit rock bottom, she lost Karina because she cheated on Jack with Jack.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, Karina kind of has a picture of what it looks like with her dealing with it in her own way, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that terrifies her.
Rightly so. So that's sort of my follow-on point, is that I think that that she's had all of this trauma for all of these years and she hasn't dealt with it. She's just buried with it and she thinks that's coping with it. And so what she's asking Karina to do is allow her to continue to bury it, whereas what Karina's asking her to do is to dig it all up and then deal with it once and for all. So I think Maya's too close to it as well, so she can't see how her behaviour's changed in response to Beckett's bullying and how everything's escalated and that she's now exhibiting problematic behaviours again, not just like the personality quirks, if you want to call them that, that she's sort of acquired due to her life experiences. So I think you're absolutely right. I just wanted to play devil's advocate a bit and kind of, because Karina's saying, I need you to respect this boundary, and Maya's saying, well, I need you to respect this one. So, you know, from an outsider's perspective, we can see that Maya's spiraling. And so Karina's not respecting the boundary because she realizes that it's dangerous to do that. But but I think that from Maya's perspective, she's kind of got a point. That Karina's trying to... Yeah, absolutely, because she's coming at it from an unhealthy perspective. But I just wanted to play devil's advocate and just kind of say, you know, Maya's, in Maya's head, she's only asking Karina to respect a boundary too. Why do you think Karina took the pregnancy test?
I didn't blame her for taking the test. She has tried to involve Maya. And if Maya blocks or calls, what's she supposed to do?
Exactly. I took it as a screw you.
Yep. I did too.
Which, whilst it may not be the most mature response, to be honest, like, I think that's probably what I would have done as well. Just like, yeah, screw you then.
Like, if you're not going to care, then I'm not going to care.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Felt bad for her in that moment. Anything more with Maya and Karina? Have we depressed ourselves enough with that?
Yeah, seriously. So unlike them.
Shall we move on to Jack in the clinic?
Sure.
Ben is getting some clinic supplies from his car when he notices Jack's pickup in the car park with Jack sleeping in it. So he knocks on the window to wake him and brings him inside. And then Karina asks if Jack is volunteering, and Ben says something like that, which Karina is pleased about because she's brought some of her own volunteers, and it's the weed mums. So Ben says to not let them bake anything. Then a mysterious young woman who looks like she just got off the back of your mum's Harley comes in bearing an envelope, and it appears that she was initially just going to drop it off. But she overhears Karina call Jack's name and sees him head back to be examined, and so quickly decides to stick around, making up an excuse to be there, which is that it burns when she pees. Ben tends to Jack's wrist, giving him a new splint because the one he's got is duct taped together. And then he gives him a telling off for sleeping in 19's car park in his truck and for reminding Prue that he exists and then disappearing again. And Ben says that when Jack disappoints Prue, he disappoints him. And Jack says that what is disappointing is what Ben and Karina have done to the clinic in his absence, because they've made it more like a hospital, which is the exact opposite of what he believed it should be. So then Ben tells Jack that basically if he wants it back the way it was, he'll have to do it himself, and then sends him for a shower and a shave and a sleep. And then Jack literally bumps into Brooke, the mysterious leather-clad lady, on his way out, and she's been listening in to this whole conversation. After a couple of false starts, Karina checks Brooke's pee, which is all clear for pregnancy and STIs, as Brooke obviously knew it would be. But then Karina asks Brooke if that's definitely what she came in for, because she says that most college girls are more relieved to find out they're not pregnant. Then Brooke goes on a rant about what you should do if someone's made it clear they don't want anything to do with you, but you know that if you could show them what they're missing, you could change their mind. And then she asks Karina if you should respect someone's boundaries if you love them, which is what gives Karina pause for thought about Maya respecting her boundaries. And then Brooke asks Karina to deliver her envelope and leaves. Then Karina turns the envelope over and sees that it is Jack who is the intended recipient. So after the clinic, Karina asks Ben if Jack's still around, telling him that a patient came in for a UTI and pregnancy test and left the envelope for him, and then slaps it at Ben's chest, clearly abdicating responsibility for it. And then at
She's
some
like,
point,
I'm not
Ben,
doing it.
Yeah. Then at some point, Ben has obviously passed the envelope off to Andy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's her who later finds a freshly showered Jack on the roof. She tells him that he's loved and that he should talk to Chief Ross about coming back to work, which at this point he says he will do. So she hands him his envelope, saying that people have been taking bets on what's inside. And as she leaves, Jack asks her what she bet on, and she says that she's bet on him having a grown daughter he knows nothing about. And he says that he'll keep her posted. And we close out Jack's block with him opening the envelope, which has inside it a baby picture of him with a post-it note stuck to it that reads, "Our parents have held on to this forever. I'm here if you ever want to talk. Love, your sister Brooke."
Yep.
So it appears that Jack still hasn't had his come to Jesus moment, even after Halloween, because he's got multiple options, hasn't he? I'm sure that Marsha would have taken him back and he could have had a home there. I've got no doubt that Andy would have put him up in a spare room or on a couch or whatever. Mm-hmm. And clearly all he had to do was walk inside of 19, not just sit in the car park, and he would have had a warm place to lay his head there.
Yep.
So for me, it's kind of Dean in a roundabout way.
Okay.
That gets him to come back, isn't it? Because it's when he sees Ben and Karina running the clinic in a way that he doesn't want it run. I think that's what kind of gets him back, because Ben says to him, doesn't he, well, you'll have to do it yourself then. So.
Yeah, and that's a good point. That it was kind of a nudge from Dean. I never looked at it that way, but it's true. And I just love those volunteer moms. I think the actresses that play them do such a good job.
Yeah, they are absolutely hilarious.
They're so funny. So
I loved Karina having a go at Jack as well. I mean, yeah. I love Karina having a go at Jack at any time. But yeah. But what she said to him was like bang on when he was moaning about having to wait. And she was like, oh, you're in a familiar place with a roof over your head. Poor you.
Yeah, I know. I love them when she's angry with him.
And this is a really small thing, but I sometimes think that we don't pay enough attention to the folks working behind the scenes. And in last week's episode, I gave a shout out to Set Deck because the crap shack looked absolutely disgusting. Like I felt like I needed a hot shower after I'd just watched it on TV. And this week when he was holding that baby picture, his hands were absolutely disgusting. There was dirt rammed right under his fingernails and down the sides, and it was ground into the dry skin on his fingertips, as it would be if he'd been sleeping rough and not regularly washing and taking care of himself. And it's just these little details that I think make a show what it is. So I just wanted to shout out makeup and costume.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, I noticed that too. I remember thinking, ew. But even that shot was a good shot too.
Yeah, it was.
Just all the way around. Yeah, for sure. Props to them.
And props to Jason George as well for the directing of that scene, because I think it must be kind of tough to direct a person who's in a scene on their own.
Mm-hmm. It's just you and them. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was great. Anything more about Jackie Boy?
Nope. The spiral continues.
The spiral continues. Well, it's kind of an upward trajectory now, hopefully, because he's going to ask for his job back. So fingers crossed. Fingers crossed things will start to go right for Jack. Shall we move on to Theo's concerns? I've literally got one paragraph on this and then I'm done.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of the episode, we see Theo checking things around the firehouse, such as extinguishers and sprinklers and things. And he tells Vic that he's doing it because he doesn't trust Beckett. And then at the end of the day, he takes the chief aside and tells her the same. And he says that Beckett's a crappy leader, that he's made a lot of mistakes, and Theo doesn't want to go through losing somebody again. And as much as he doesn't like coming to the chief with it, he feels like he has to. So I think these were two just like really small scenes, one at the beginning, one at the end. I thought that was quite good that it sandwiched it as well. That it kind of, so they didn't make a massive deal out of it, but they just started and ended with the fact that Theo is noticing that someone's going to have to take control of the ship because it's kind of out of control.
Yeah. What do you say? It makes an itchy. I'm itchy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, that I think that was kind of a perfect word as well for that like niggling unease.
Yeah, I know, I think so too. It was definitely it kind of, if you're a person who's visual or has an imagination, it kind of created, painted the picture very well with that word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so, because I'm a visual person, so it made it, the word kind of bring what he was feeling to life to me. It was a good word.
It was good. It was a really good word to use. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've whizzed through that, but I genuinely don't have anything more to say. I thought it was a really straightforward episode,
Yeah, and I
generally.
mean the incident, it wasn't that long, which usually that's where a lot of the, if it's not, Maya spiraling out of control, then it's the incident at this point in season six, and we didn't get a lot of either, because we actually had a little bit of light with Maya and Karina, which was then just like their first date was dampered by Maya.
She's good at that.
She is. And so it just, I don't know, I hate to say it, but I think even though this episode, in your opinion, wasn't as quote unquote boring as the last one, it lacked really substance, to me. Meaning something to grab onto and kind of stick with. It was a good episode, but it just didn't give you, like, I think the in the feels, it was only in the feels when it came to Maya and Karina. The rest of the episode, it wasn't really a touchy-feely episode.
I thought it did what it needed to do. I thought I liked that everyone got something in this episode as well, because a lot of times, and I think that's quite reflected in our blocks as well. I think that you can see it quite clearly, kind of in the way that we set things out sometimes, that a lot of people aren't really getting a lot of story time, airtime, or storylines, airtime. That it all kind of focuses in sort of large blocks in certain areas. Whereas this episode, I felt like it was spread out. So we got to see what Sullivan was thinking. We got to see what Andy was thinking. We got to see what Vic was thinking. We got to see what Travis was at Theo. Like virtually everybody got a little bit of something in this episode. And I quite enjoyed it for that it felt like it moved everybody along. And I genuinely did think that it was 10 times better than last week. It felt to me like it had been written by a veteran writer on the show. The actual writing, the dialogue and the banter and everything. So I was absolutely shocked to find out that it was not only his first episode of Station 19, but that Mello Brown has never actually written an episode of television before this. Because I thought that there was tenderness in it, there was comedy in it. You had the tenderness between Maya and Karina. There was like a lot of comedy stuff with Vic and Travis, and even Sullivan had like some sort of little comedic moments with Andy in the aid car. There was high octane drama. I'd thought that it kind of had a little sprinkling of everything, which is why for me it was a strong episode.
There just wasn't a lot to unpack to me.
No, not to unpack. There wasn't a lot to unpack, but I think the reason for that is that this was, well, it, so it kind of feeds into what I thought was the theme of the episode. So did you see a theme?
I just wasn't really impressed with this episode.
For me, the theme is kind of like crossroads, or reaching the end of a road, reaching the end of your tether, reaching whatever, but reaching that point where you realize that you need to change direction. So you see the chief not going through with it necessarily, but starting to change direction in her relationship with Sullivan, texting him saying perhaps we shouldn't be doing this. And then we see in the opposite direction Sullivan giving in. I mean, he gave in to the donut, which I think might mean giving in to the chief and not fighting against her, you know, not fighting against it anymore, and you know, wanting more, like his change of direction is to pursue her. And then I think Karina's reached the end of her rope with Maya twice in this episode. Once in her general fight with her, she tried the sorpresa approach. And then again, she told Maya that she needs to get help. So she's reached a crossroads twice in this episode. Jack has realized that he can't keep living the way he has been, so he's going to come back to the station. Brooke is trying to initiate a relationship with Jack. She's kind of saying, well, you know, him ignoring us, his bio family, is not an option anymore. I'm going to take a direct approach. Gave him the picture. I think even Beckett's made a change, being almost nice to Maya. And then Vic and Travis have both accepted it's time for change. She's left his campaign and he's brought on Eli with his campaign. Theo's making a change because he's telling the chief how destructive Beckett is. So he's decided to change things in the station. And the only person that can't see that enough is enough and is carrying on regardless and can't see that they need to change is poor broken Maya.
I don't know if I'm the only one that caught this, but I don't really think Beckett was being nice to Maya, because he emphasized, when he said asset, he emphasized the beginning of the word a little bit too much to me. So, yeah, he wasn't really being kind there.
I did say he was almost nice to Maya. He made an outward appearance of niceness. I don't think he meant it, but I think that he still, it's different to last week, right? Whereas he didn't throw the breakfast on the floor, which would have been last week's Beckett approach. So I don't think this episode was supposed to have anything like deep and meaningful that we could unpack. I think it was just literally everyone kind of reaching a point where they were ready to make a change. So I think it was just kind of everyone's behaviors rather than everyone's feelings that we were looking at this week, was my kind of take on it. Did you see any themes at all?
Well, and just to go back, like, that's what makes it a really good episode to me, though, is having something to unpack, having something to connect to emotionally, pulls you into the episode. And I just felt like it lacked that, that's all. I mean, it was a good episode, but it wasn't my favorite episode.
I think there's always one or two episodes in a season where there's like the turning point. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is a turning point for just about everybody except for Maya. I mean, it probably is a turning point for Maya. She just doesn't know because she's not the one doing the steering.
Yeah.
But I completely agree with you that that I like something emotional to unpack. And this didn't have that, but I think it did its job quite well for me.
Okay.
What are your takeaways? What are you looking forward to coming up?
I guess to see if Eli can do his job now that he's officially the campaign manager. To see what Jack decides to do with the picture and his bio family. And to see of course, what happens with Maya and Karina.
Yeah.
Is Maya going to listen to her wife and respect that boundary or keep spiraling?
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I'm sad for the chief, so I want to see her being honest with Sullivan and for her to do what Andy told Sullivan to do, which is to ask for what she wants. So that's what I would like to see.
Okay, that's a good one.
Who did you think had the best growth in this episode?
Gosh, they all had something to say or do, so that's a tough one. Probably, I don't know. I'll say Vic and Travis.
Okay.
And that'd probably be my theme is speaking your truth or speaking what you want.
Yeah.
Because Karina spoke to Maya what she wanted. Vic spoke to Travis finally what she wanted, even though Travis was wanting to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And then, Sullivan speaking his truth to the chief trying to speak her truth to him. So I guess speaking your truth or your feelings.
Yeah, I think that works perfectly, yeah. For me, I think Jack had the most growth because he didn't get back in his truck and go back to some dive bar somewhere. He stuck around at 19 and he said that he's going to speak to the chief about coming back. So I think that that shows growth from Jack. He just needs to have a date with a bar of soap and a pumice stone now.
Yeah, I would definitely do that before going to see the chief for sure.
Yes. Which was the best scene for you?
I mean it. I hate to give it to them, but at first I was going to say that scene, because I like when Andy's her reaction to Jack was probably the most emotional scene in this episode to me. But then I was picturing Karina saying surprise. I'm like, how can you not pick that scene? So I guess I'd pick those two scenes.
Yeah. Well, I went for the surprise scene as well. Well, not just that scene, but the whole shebang
The
of them
whole,
in the apartment, because everything was brilliant. It was beautifully written. The acting was absolutely superb. And I have to say, especially from Stefania, who showed so many shades in that one short scene, like facially, verbally, it was just absolutely stunning. Set deck, costume, lighting, Jason George with his directing, everyone shot for the moon and surpassed it, I think, in that scene. So that was the standout one for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And not just because of the food.
You're such a foodie.
I know. Best lines or best bit of dialogue for you?
I liked the reminiscent of the first date dialogue.
Yeah.
That specific from that scene,
Yeah.
that specific dialogue.
Where she
It was cute, it was funny, it was.
says it's the same lingerie, the same lavender flowers, that stuff, or yeah.
And there's the jerk who pushed me away. It was
Yeah.
just, I just liked that little exchange.
Yeah.
How about you?
I went for a silly line again. Because I thought it was
Okay.
really funny when Ben said that's the first time I could describe Beckett as casual without adding misogyny.
Oh, okay.
Just thought it was very witty, and I enjoy wit. Who was your MVP?
I guess we'll pick Jack for this episode.
Okay.
Or Gray Damon. He showed a lot of different emotions and a lot of variety in his character from the beginning of who he was in the beginning to who he was at the end.
Yeah.
And he did a pretty good job doing it.
I'm giving it to the Weed Mums.
Yeah. They could get it a lot.
The Weed Mums were hilarious. They just added so much colour to this episode, and they just lifted the whole thing for me. So, Weed Mums, Peggy and Dana.
Yes.
Big up your bad self. Most gif-able moment for you?
Oh, geez, that's tough for this one.
It was tough, actually.
It is. It's got to be the Weed Mom's reaction when she tells her that she's not pregnant. In the
no! Mate, that's exactly what I put.
Is it?
I've put when Karina gives Brooke the all clear and the Weed Mums are in the background doing a little hip thrust and comedy dance comedy dance moves in celebration for her. That's gotta be what
it.
I've written down. That's so funny. That's so
that
funny.
That is funny. Out of 42 minutes, we both picked the same exact scene.
The same exact, and it was in the background, and it's like a second and a half of just like whoop, whoop.
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny. I think that's the episode for me.
Yeah, I agree. We did whiz through that.
We did whiz through. We've only been recording for like an hour and 10 minutes. That's nothing for us. Next week, we're on 606, Everybody Says Don't. And it says, when a lightning storm crashes a helicopter, the team is drawn away from hosting a fire boot camp for young women. There goes the girls' camp. And Fire Chief Ross calls on Jack to help Vic run the camp instead. Things get even more heated inside between Karina and Maya.
Boo.
Boo. I remember the first time round seeing the synopsis of that before 605 had aired. And Stefania and Danielle had said something about there being like a positive moment, and seeing the things get more heated inside, I thought that was when they were going to have like some dramatic reunion. Mm-hmm. But now I can't genuinely remember what it is, but obviously I know that it's not anything good. So I saw things getting heated originally, I was like, ding dong. But
you took it the other way of heated.
Yeah, but now... Yeah. Now I obviously know better, but I genuinely can't remember what the issue is.
But that's good
because I'm going to go into it fresh. I'm going to be surprised all over again.
No, that is good. Instead of just sitting there like with your head tilted because you've seen it a million times.
Yes. All I can remember from this episode is Baby Shark.
Baby
Shark. Because that's where I first heard the Baby Shark song. And I was like, oh, that's what people are talking about.
Yep. Now I'm going to have that stuck in my head.
You're very welcome.
Obelix sings that. It's the sweetest thing, hearing a two-year-old sing Baby Shark.
Yeah, the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I know that Obi has got up and is probably looking for some mummy time. So I will let you get back to him. And I can hear Tucker complaining downstairs just because he's away from me and he's a needy soul these days. He needs to be velcroed to my side at all times, or he just can't cope with his life. So I'd better go and deal with him. We'll both go and deal with our sons.
Yes. For sure.
And I'll see you anon. Don't work too hard.
Well, I won't. Don't you worry about that. All right.
Speak soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye, mate. Bye.